Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and as always, I try to kind of look to the cutting edge of consciousness and what is unfolding in the future and where we've come from. And in conjunction with that, I'll be one of the MCs at the upcoming Contact in the Desert event that's happening in Joshua Tree, California, at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. And one of our star keynote speakers there is tonight's guest, Mike Barra. And Mike has a new book about ancient aliens and secret society. So welcome, Mike, to the show.
Hey, thank you, Alan. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here, and we always have a lot of fun in the desert, don't we? I mean, what's been your past experiences of those shows?
Well, I think that Contact in the Desert is, it's truly the most amazing experience I've ever had at any kind of conference. I mean, not only were there thousands and thousands of people there every day. I mean, you know, it dwarfs any other UFO conference. There's other conferences out there that claim that they're the most well-attended, but Contact in the Desert just destroys them by about a factor of four or so. The amount of people that's there is just phenomenal. The amount of curiosity that the people bring, the amount of enthusiasm for the subject and all different aspects of the subject, whether it's ancient aliens, whether it's abduction and experience, whether it's sightings, it's, you know, the MUFON crowd. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal experience, and it was really life-changing for me. I mean, it changed the way I'm going to do my presentations from now on. Because
what changed for you? How did it change?
Well, it was really interesting because, you know, what I do, and people like this, but what I do is, you know, I do my slide presentations where I show them pictures. A lot of the previous work that I've done, ancient aliens on the moon, ancient aliens on Mars, that's pretty visual stuff. So I've got to show them slides of the kind of things that I'm talking about. But we had a power outage, as you probably remember.
Right.
On
it's a
Saturday.
Hot, sweaty power outage. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And it occurred right when I was supposed to go up and do my free lecture session, which was about an hour and a half. So what I said was the microphone was still working. And I said, I think I just yelled now that I remember. I said, look, let's just talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. And there was, I don't know, 400 or 500 people right there in the hall. And we just talked. And so it was different for me because instead of pushing information at people, I was interacting. It was going back and forth. Now, there were people asking me questions about reptilians and things I don't really know much about, but it was a great thing because it was a sharing of curiosity and experience, and rather than me just pushing information at people. And I found that to be very gratifying.
Well, no, I appreciate you saying that because it takes so much work to put these things together, and the fact that presenters and the audience are able to kind of move to a new place together, I think is something very positive for the movement of truth, you know, the movement of what's really going on.
And it just changed my perspective on how I wanted to get information out to people, you know, and I think from now on I'm going to do short presentations and, you know, then the rest of the time we're going to spend talking to each other, which I think is it's going to be really different and really fun.
Well, this next one, like I said, is coming up in May. It's May 29th to the 31st. Check out the Joshua Tree Retreat Center for more information, tickets, and the list of speakers. Are you going to be at this one talking about the latest book, Ancient Aliens and Secret Societies?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be talking about that. I have a free lecture, which I think is about 90 minutes. I have a workshop presentation on Saturday, and then I have a special, intensive session, which is 3 hours long on Monday. It's the kind of after-conference intensive, which I'm going to do with a friend of mine, Dean Ryan, who is very much into conspiracy. So what I'm going to try to do is present different information at all three of those, but information that all ties in together. In other words, this is where the ancient aliens came from, and this is the mark they left behind, and this is how they've influenced us and their interaction here, and then this is the future. This is the potential future to avoid, and this is the future that we want to reach out and grab. So, you know, I can see a real theme building, and it's going to be great.
Well, let's get a little specific about that, because what I know is, like, some people call them archonic energy, or some people say that there's a allegiance in the secret societies to these aliens that want to control the consciousness of Earth. What kind of approach do you take on this?
Well, what I think has happened is that the original purpose of the secret societies was to be a priesthood. If you look at a lot of the Sumerian histories of the Anunnaki and their visits, and if you look at the ancient tales of the Egyptians, what you see is that there was definitely a desire on the part of the so-called gods, who I think were really extraterrestrials, to impart information to the human race, to gift us with something, the knowledge and civilization and science and art and agriculture and you know, things that we did not have as quasi-civilized beings at the time.
So you don't take the other approach, the Anunnaki approach, that we were here to make to become a slave race to these gods.
No. Okay. And I don't think Sitchin does either. It's interesting because as I was researching ancient aliens and secret societies, I went back and read over a whole bunch of Sitchin's material. And what happens is that people make that statement because it kind of comes out of the 12th planet. But then he wrote more books, he evolved. You know, he started changing his perspective. And in fact, it appears that the Anunnaki perspective was never that. In fact, they had moral arguments about whether it was right to create this, this race of beings. And the argument from Enki was they're workers. They're not slaves. We're not allowed to create slaves. It's against our laws. Machines are slaves. You know, workers are workers. And so, no, I don't think we're slaves at all. And I think that they wanted to take care of us before they left.
But do you think something has happened now where we've been starting to be ruled and controlled, the Illuminati, whatever, mind controlled by these distractions that have taken our humanity away and let corporations run the world? Is there something
about
that?
Well, first of all, keep in mind governments are corporations also. They're, every single one of them is incorporated if you really dig into it, including the United States government is actually a corporation.
Especially the United States government, I would say.
Yeah. And so, you know, what happened was, I think, is that their purpose became perverted. They were supposed to be trustees of these secrets and this high knowledge and you know, give it to us as was needed to push us in the right direction. Somewhere along the way, they realized that they could make themselves into quasi-gods themselves. And so the whole purpose of the secret societies kind of got perverted. So,
perverted. Some people say actually by the aliens themselves. This is some theory, in order to control.
Remember, I don't think that was their original intent. But remember, aliens are no different than us. There's good ones and there's bad ones. And certainly my experiences on TV and investigating things like uncovering aliens, I met people that have had bad experiences with bad aliens and good experiences with good aliens. So they're just like us. There's no difference. So I think there might be some bad guys influencing the secret societies, but what I believe after digging into all this is that absolutely there was an intent to guide us in the right direction. But remember, Alan, we're still living in the age of Pisces. We're in the occulted age of Pisces, and we're going to move into Aquarius, and that's part of what this whole 2012 energy is all about. And once we get through that, things are going to be revealed, and once things are going to be revealed, then old power structures are going to collapse, and new ones are going to arise, and they're going to be much more equitable, much more fair, and I think much more along the lines of what the gods, the extraterrestrial gods, and I use a small g there, what they intended. That's the direction we're headed, I think.
Great. But so let's talk about, of course, people have ideas about what aliens or ancient aliens or the Anunnaki were about, but secret societies, I mean, that is a fascinating history because it's sort of complex and it's so wide-ranging. And where do they begin? Do they go back to the Masons, go back to Egypt? Do they control the governments of the planet? I mean, what's going on? Give us an outline of the scope of secret societies.
I think they're very influential, but I don't think that they are in complete control. So in other words, I don't think everything is totally controlled. I don't think everything is totally fed to us to create an alternate reality. I don't really, believe in the matrix, so to speak, because there's still individual choice. I mean, my second book was called The Choice, and it was all about how individual choice affects everything, including it can affect the physics of the world that we live in, the actual physical world that we live in. So I don't really go for that, but what I do think is that there's definitely a heavy influence, and what seems to be the case is that they do seem to, especially the Freemasons, who do trace their roots all the way back to ancient Egypt at the very least, they seem to be able to influence specific organizations and specific governmental structures. And in my case, of course, my focus is NASA. That's where I've been. And when you look at NASA, my research, all of it points to the fact that there was definitely a heavy, heavy Masonic influence on the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
In what way? How do you see that? What way?
What they did was they worshipped the gods of ancient Egypt, Isis, Osiris, and Horus. That's the root basis of the Masonic belief system. It's also the root basis of the Nazis belief system that were descended from these gods. And there were lots of Nazis at NASA. And also, you know, at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which runs all the unmanned probes for NASA for the most part, they were heavily influenced by Aleister Crowley and black magic and people like Jack Parsons, who were also in a belief system that had to do with these myths of Isis, Osiris, and Horus. Well, if you dig into the myth, it's pretty clear that they were actually extraterrestrial beings, these gods, and they came from the stars. And so NASA, the purpose of NASA was to get us back from whence we came, specifically to start with the moon. And so how that was influenced is that it influenced the heraldry, it influenced the mission patches, it influenced the names of spacecraft, and it influenced the dates and times that we chose to, for instance, land on the moon. For instance, did you know that we landed on the moon on Adolf Hitler's birthday?
And there were all these Nazis. July?
You know, most people don't know that.
What was that, July what?
No, well, July 20th, 1969 was the first moon landing of right. Apollo 11, but Apollo 16, which had a lunar module named Orion, which is interchangeable in the Egyptian religion with Osiris. So a lunar module named after Osiris landed on the moon on Adolf Hitler's birthday with the constellation of Orion, the belt stars represented by the Great Pyramids in Egypt, exactly 33 degrees above the landing site. So you have the Nazi influence, the Freemasonic influence, the ancient Egyptian influence, all in this one landing. And so what
day was that? What day did they land?
That was actually April 16th, 1972. April 20th, 1972.
Oh, okay.
So in other words, there was no question that date and time and place was selected for that reason. And it's interesting because as you dig into the ancient Egyptian stellar religion, and if you dig into Sitchin's writing, what you find is that the Anunnaki believed in something they called tablets of destiny. And what they were astrological and astronomical charts combined, which not only told you how to get from point A to point B, but when was the most auspicious time to do it, based on the physics and based on this astrology. And NASA was doing exactly the same thing. I think that's what they were reconstructing. So they were trying to show
the gods. Oh, so you're saying that NASA, I mean, the only reason to do those things is to set up energetically certain configurations that create certain forces that affect people here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so they did that with it's sort of like occult magic in a way. They're saying they're doing.
It is absolutely. That's what I'm saying. And it was actually, I think, done also to make sure that the missions were successful, to make sure that the guys, you know, got there and back. And then we can't do it on this date and time. We have to do it on this date and time because this is the perfect time to do it. And you know,
I wonder who NASA's astrologer was. Do you know? Anyway.
Yes, I do know. His name was Dr. Farouk El-Baz, and he was a, quote, geologist who was from a very prominent family, still is, he's still alive, from a very prominent family in Egypt. And guess what? His father was an expert on. His father was an expert on the ancient stellar religion of ancient Egypt. In other words, he understood the significance and the power of the movements of the stars and the planets. So he was perfectly equipped, the best equipped guy on the planet probably, to select the proper dates and times for everything to go down correctly, which ultimately is what happened.
You know, the word, just a side thing, the whole word temple comes from template, reflection of the stars. You know, people built temples in a way to reflect the heavens, and now we were moving into the heavens. It was a sort of a sacred science, you could say, in a way, what NASA was doing, right?
Absolutely, Alan. And do you remember what Neil Armstrong said when he took his first step on lunar surface? Do you remember the words that he spoke?
This is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
For mankind. Okay, now, it's been argued that he made a mistake or that he actually said that's one small step for a man.
Yes.
And one giant leap for mankind. So he said it must have been a mistake because he meant to say amen. And I'm saying no. He meant exactly what he said, and it was a coded signal to everybody who was paying attention. That's one small step for man, meaning us, this version of humanity, and a giant leap for mankind, meaning the greater human brotherhood that exists probably throughout this entire part of the galaxy, meaning the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki were mankind. We are man, and what he meant by that was, you know, it's just a step, just one small step off of a landing pad, but we are coming back, we are returning to the stars from whence we came to meet our brothers, and I think that's exactly
what
he meant.
Wow, I get chills when you say that. It makes sense.
Well, it must be true then. And also, you know, people don't know this, but there's a lot of pictures from that first mission, Apollo 11, that are very famous, very iconic pictures of an astronaut with the, you know, other astronaut in his reflected in his visor and standing next to the American flag. And all of those pictures are of Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon, not Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon.
And the reason
for that is that Buzz Aldrin was a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Freemason, and Neil Armstrong was not. In fact, I think the only reason Neil Armstrong went out first is because he had the camera. And his job was to photograph the first Freemason to walk on the surface of the moon.
Well, Buzz is still alive. Have you talked to Buzz about this?
No, I would love to get him, you know, put a few shots of scotch into him and have a little chat about some of these things. And you know, just to clarify that last point, there are actually no photographs of Neil Armstrong on the surface of the moon except a couple of accidental shots of his legs. All those pictures are of Buzz Aldrin. And what people also don't really appreciate or know is that Buzz Aldrin performed a ceremony in the lunar module before they went out on their spacewalk with wine and chalices. It was, you know, it was kind of a, he called it a communion ceremony. But the Egyptians used to perform these types of sacraments as well. They were honorariums to Osiris. Of course, again, the god Osiris.
So were they setting up the moon environment energetically to, you know, kind of acts to be a holder of Freemason energy? I mean, it's Freemasons, they're so perversive and, I mean, pervasive. I mean, they're around. It's like if you go to the back of Independence Hall, do you know that in Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
You know the statue behind? It's of this Admiral Barry. Do you know? And
Admiral Barry,
behind Independence Hall, is pointing, I guess that's to the south. And I said, what is Admiral Barry pointing at? And it's the Masonic Hall of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever noticed that?
I have not. I was not aware of that one. It's another one to add to the list. But
definitely.
Here's the other thing, too, is he took a 33rd degree Scottish Rite flag from the temple in Washington, D.C. with him to the moon. And what is the point of bringing a ceremonial apron to a place if you're not going to perform a ceremony with it? So we know he had the apron, the Masonic apron. We know he performed a ceremony. The only thing we haven't connected yet and proven out is did he wear the dang apron when he did his, quote, communion ceremony? And my bet is 99% yes. So he was consecrating the moon as a temple. You used the word earlier, as a temple for Masonry.
But what is the point? Do they have some power that they get from that? I don't understand. I mean, why are they doing this?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think, number one, it's the symbolic nature of it. You know, we claim this place for Masonry and, you know, this return to the gods and this reconnection with our origin. And also, it's because it's done under the auspices of the stars, and I think that it's something where they have to kind of acknowledge the reality of the universe that we live in and who really controls it and the gods that really run things and how, you know, it all really works. So I think part of it is in order to ensure the success of their venture, and the other part of it is to, you know, establish a claim to this place.
But I also think it's energetic. I think there's something that they're then able to control or manipulate a greater power.
I'm agreeing with you, Alan. Yeah, and I think that comes from the alignments of the stars. I think that's where they get their power from, or they believe. Because remember, in Egypt and many other cultures, as above, so below. And you know, believe me, when he did his communion ceremony, you know, Sirius, Isis was at a very specific point in the sky above the landing site. So these things are all well thought through and well arranged. And I think that those are actually the driving forces behind the choosing of the dates and times and places that they would land on the moon.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm so happy you put this kind of ideas together, because no one thought of this. So is that still going on? Are they still controlling our space program, the eight secret societies?
Yeah, they are. And Richard Hoagland and I wrote a book called Dark Mission many, many years ago now. I talked about a lot of these things, and one of the things we talked about was that two of the real power numbers that they seem to be focused on inside NASA are 19.5 degrees, an alignment of 19.5 degrees, and alignments of 33 degrees. 33 is obviously Masonic. 19.5 has to do with higher dimensional physics and tetrahedrons and lots of things.
Right. Tetrahedron? Yeah.
Exactly, which of course is how you draw power from the ether, or more precisely power from higher up. And right. So it was about creating power and energy for themselves and using this this real physics, the real physics that they hold in secret behind the veil, behind the curtain that they don't share with us, while we continue to use chemical rockets. I mean, if you look at transportation speeds, you know, you started out with a man walking, and then we rode horses, and pretty soon we had the horse and buggy, and then we had very primitive steam trains, and then we had primitive automobiles, and then we had propeller airplanes, and then we had jet airplanes, and then we had rockets. And if you chart that on a graph, it goes straight up in terms of speed. In other words, we've gone from, in less than 100 years or so, a couple hundred years, we've gone from basically the horse and buggy to rockets. So that curve goes straight up. And then in 1960, it just dead stops. In other words, you have to believe, if you believe in the physics that they teach us and that they show in films like Interstellar, then what you have to believe is that for the last 64 years, 65 years, there has not been one single innovation in terms of propulsion that can drive us any faster than a chemical rocket. And I don't think that's true. I think there have been many discoveries of amazing technologies that have been suppressed and hidden and taken behind the scenes, because the graph goes straight up and then it goes straight across.
But why was it taken and hidden? What was the purpose?
Well, because we have an economy that is petroleum-based, that is based on certain, you know, certain economic realities. And in some cases, I think that's for our own good. So if you were to develop, let's say, a power source that allowed you basically unlimited energy, then you really can't have an economy that's based on petroleum. It would be based on this unlimited energy. And if it's unlimited, then really nothing costs you anything, right? There's no expense. So then you cannot have an economic system. And I think that our economic system is designed to keep us from all becoming, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Part of it, people will say, it keeps us imprisoned in the commercial, you know, the commercial world, but it also gives us goals and gives us things to strive for. Whereas I don't know if human beings are ready to have a world where everything is at their fingertips and, you know, we can have whatever we want. I think most of us would get very lazy and very spoiled very quickly. So I think that's one of the reasons why.
Well, I think it needs a spiritual evolution with you know, technological, but what evidence do you have of a higher technology that continued after rockets? I mean, what do you see that's around that may have leaked out?
Well, this is interesting. I'm going to be talking about this, but there's a couple of NASA videos from space shuttle missions, STS-48 and STS-80, and they both, in my opinion, clearly show the performance of, well, I guess what you would call flying saucers. Flying saucer technology, making impossible turns at thousands of miles per hour, spacecraft that are, you know, orbiting and station keeping with the shuttle that are clearly artificial craft that have capabilities far beyond anything that we have in terms of rockets. Now, what I don't believe is that the aliens just called up NASA and said, by the way, we're going to be in such and such a place at such and such a time. Have your camera pointed in this direction. It appears to me from watching both of those videos that these were pre-planned demonstrations of technology, and the shuttle was actually being used to film these tests in low Earth orbit. So I think we've got flying saucer-type technology. And in fact, there's some astronauts that over the years have made semi-private statements to that effect, that they've always felt that there was a kind of a secret parallel space program going on.
Well, no, this is fascinating stuff. I really appreciate your research, and I'm looking forward to hearing the whole presentation at Contact. But let me just ask you, as we sort of wrap up here, but where are they going? What's their, trajectory of these secret societies? Because they already have complete world domination. What more would they want?
Well, I don't know that.
It depends
it depends on the secret society, whether they want more than world domination. There are those, you know, if you look at the Georgia Guidestones, which I'm sure you know about, there are those that would like to reduce the population of the planet Earth. Those are bad guys. We need to stop them at all costs. There are also those who I think want to continue the mission that they were originally given, which is to bring us to enlightenment, bring us to a higher place. And I've talked to people who work with people in the government. So I'm one step removed from these other government people. And many of them, including the members of the military, will acknowledge that they themselves are extraterrestrials. As Bob Dean, the wonderful Robert O. Dean, put it one time, you know, he said, Mike, extraterrestrials aren't in the government. Extraterrestrials are the government. And he pointed
really
to
because
specific...
I find that a little hard to believe because, you know,
well,
I mean, I don't know.
I do too, but you know, he pointed a couple people out to me that he said were Anunnaki, that were still here and still alive. And you know, I mean, if you look at the ancient Sumerian legends of Enki and Enlil, I came away from writing this book with the distinct impression that Enki himself, one of those gods of those old stories, is still here, that he's still alive, and he's still here, and he still hopes to clear the karma that he and his brother and the rest of them created with all the misdeeds that they conducted when they were here for hundreds of thousands of years before. So I'm actually pretty optimistic about the future, and I think that if we can get the secret societies to loosen up the reins a little bit and let those of us that get it out of the matrix, I think there's a lot of good that can be done for the human race in the future, and that's the perspective that I hope wins out.
I really appreciate that perspective because it's such a refreshing thought compared to all the other kind of negative conspiracy stuff you hear out there and doomsday and it's no hope and, you know, we're stuck. So I really think your perspective is important because it gives people hope and power.
Yeah, at least it's an alternative, and I guess it is empowering in a way because I think that ultimately it's up to us to decide our own future, and I don't really think anybody else. I don't think anybody else can really decide for us, but we can get dumb, stupid, and lazy, and let them take our proxy, and make decisions for us, and that's what I think we have to be cautious of and conscious of.
We do have to be cautious and conscious, but I do also think that the real secrets of secret societies have yet to be revealed, and I think
I agree.
It's far more complex, and I think has to do with controlling the telluric lines of the Earth. If you've read Umberto Eco's book, Foucault's Pendulum,
mm-hmm.
He talks about. Did you read that book?
I have read the book. Yes,
because I think there's a power that's accessible, and actually, you know, all the first presidents were all built their houses on mounds. I think there's something about controlling earth energies like that and controlling
mm-hmm.
political power. And it's so deep and so complex. And what you've discovered about NASA is just, you know, it's really important. And I think we just have to keep digging deeper into these secret histories to find out what's really going on here. And it's a revelation. So,
yeah, the first step is to retrace what they did, and then the second step is to figure out why they did it, and the third step is to figure out what we're going to do about it.
Exactly. Is that in your book? Do you cover what we're going to do about it in that book?
Yeah and no. Yeah and no. there's more of that in my second book, The Choice, I think. So I might refer you back to that. But the truth is, you know, we have a lot. We have to choose first that we're going to be involved in our future and how it comes out. And once we do that, the power comes to us.
Well, I think that's why it's important that you're at contact, that we're all at contact in the desert, because this is a way of joining forces together with other like-minded people to make a statement, to come forward and say, we want the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's more than we want the truth. I think, you know, I don't want to be one of these disclosure guys who sits there and begs the government to tell us the truth. I think we know a lot of truth. A lot of truth is right in front of us, because remember, secret societies, they can't hide this stuff. They have to put it out. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean if we don't pay attention that they're going to give it. You know, they're not going to just hand it to us on a silver platter.
Why do they have to put it out? They're called secret societies because they keep those secrets. I mean, you know,
because it is there is an I don't want to say allegiance, but they have a responsibility to those that put them in power to reveal the truth. That was their original, it's a contract, you know, Alan, it's a contract. That was their original commission, and what they were supposed to be doing was to give us this information. So I think the reason they put it out and they leave these breadcrumbs for us to piece this back together is so someday when these guys come back and ask for a full accounting, they can say, well, look, we put all the information out. It was right in front of them. It's not our fault they didn't listen. It's not our fault they didn't pay attention. It's not our fault they didn't have questions.
Well, let's talk about this more at contact for sure, you know?
Absolutely.
And so how can people get your latest book?
Well, you can pick it up you can pre-order it from Amazon.com right now. It will be out in early April, so another week or two at the most. I think we're going to be looking at the second week of April, so you can order it from Amazon.com. You can order it directly from Adventures Unlimited Press. That'll probably be the fastest way. And as soon as they get their books in at Adventures Unlimited, I will let everybody know on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and all of my other social connections and my blog that they can go pick it up. So it should be available in the next week or two. And then, of course, we'll be talking about it at Contact in the desert.
Well, thanks, Mike, for being a guest. And your website again is Mike Barra?
It's mikebarra.blogspot.com. If you just type in Mike Barra in Google, B-A-R-A, I'll pop right up. So a lot of other garbage, it's not true. but just click that top link to my blog, and you can get all the information there.
Great. No, I look forward to seeing you at Contact in the Desert. For people listening, May 29th to 31st, go to the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. You get tickets there. It'll also be tickets on my website, newrealities.com. And thanks, Mike. We'll continue the conversation again soon.
Alan, absolutely. You're welcome. And I'm really looking forward to the event. If it's half as spectacular as last year, it'll be awesome.
You're right. It's going to be an amazing event for anyone listening. You've got to be there because I feel it's the next level of our collective coming together, our collective awakening because of all these different aspects. Yeah? What
was that? Yeah, I agree.
All right. Yes, thanks. And I have another, some guests else coming in. So I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay. That was Mike Barra that was part one of this show. And part two, we're going to kind of shift gears a little bit. And we could now talk about another subject I'm very interested in, which is called sex dreaming. And this has to do with the work of Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan Matus, the Toltec dreaming. And I'm here with two people in Southern California who have formulated a whole new ideas of how to use the power, personal power, to create these new realities. So do you want to introduce yourself here?
We are Teka and Nuit.
And?
Teka and Nuit.
Teka and Nuit here, and they've just written a book called Sex Dreaming, Esoteric Sexuality Revealed. And that's Teka playing his little drum. I don't know if you can hear that. But let's talk about sex dreaming. What do you mean by sex dreaming? Anybody?
In the Toltec map, they saw that people making love generated a bluish hue that they named the colored dust. And they realized that this energy that they were generating could be harnessed and eventually open up parallel worlds to the earth band. Mm. Sex dreaming is to get closer to another person, to build awareness and orgasm, but it is also for spirit travel of your energy double.
Okay, let me see if I get this. So we use sexual energy to shift awareness. Is that what you're saying?
We generate energy through sexuality.
Okay.
Through the sexual energy. We become batteries. We become batteries. The definition of sex dreaming is the discipline that allows us to generate energy through sexuality.
And the discipline is what? What is that, if you care to share? Because I know you've really researched this and you've discovered something here.
Mm-hmm. Working with a group of associates.
Yes.
To lose your self-importance and to become batteries of energy.
The ultimate,
for space travel. Mm-hmm.
The ultimate goal of sex dreaming for us is different than people who are not going to become sorcerers. The book was written, give a shout out to Anthony, because he was an everyman who met us, and he didn't want to become a sorcerer, but he wanted to share that people could have honest, intimate relationships if they go further with their energy double, fine. This was a way to get out of the rut of dishonesty that has engulfed sexuality.
What do you mean? So let me take those two answers. And you're saying, so there's energy that people generate with sexual energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's basic chi, orgone energy, whatever you want to call it. And what's the dishonesty then about that you're talking about?
Let's pretend that every motion picture has some degree of cheating in it, where the plot involves somebody cheating on somebody else and having to cover that up.
Okay.
In various ways. That cheating has occurred, and the Toltecs discovered this, when vaginal penetration messes with the female's intuitive sensing organ.
So let me see if I can get what you're saying. So you're saying penetration is a way of interfering with the woman's psychic abilities? Is that what you're saying?
Except for your committed partner.
Okay.
There's two branches here.
Okay.
We're talking about.
We're balancing between the earth and the sky.
Male and female.
We're here on this earth, and we're right in the middle between earth and sky. And we want to be earth, and we want to be sky.
Okay.
We want commitments. We want a relationship. We want a family. And we want to dream and honor our mystery.
Yes.
And so a lot of times people in their commitments forget about the mystery.
Mm. Oh, so they're too worried about their commitments, their relationship, and forget the fact there's life and the mystery is moving through them.
To put it another more blatant way is, yes, people always begin a relationship saying, I love you.
Right.
And that at that moment, they are truly united for a lifetime awareness. But we've seen that this falls apart somehow. And why does that occur?
Routine kills the mystery.
Routine also smothers the energy, too. We say Is the energy connected to
it's
the...
It's basically routine keeps you in an assemblage point.
A fixed assemblage
point. Fixed assemblage point, yes. And the routine is necessary for the survival of your family, and we want that.
Right.
We want to be there for their children.
Okay.
Right.
But to have an alive relationship and a dynamic connection.
And commitment is a beautiful thing. To be able to honor a commitment forever. What a beautiful thing.
Forever is a long time. You sure it lasts forever, that commitment?
My sorcery path led me to when I said that I love somebody, I never wanted it to go away.
Right.
And I regret all of the people that I'm no longer loving with.
Right. So getting back to how, so you're taking sexual energy and using it to empower
yourself. Sexual energy within the earth.
Yes.
Creating family, vaginal penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Sexual energy as batteries for the sky, so we can dream, so we can create mass energy together, so we can travel to other civilizations and interact with them. That's sex dreaming.
And it has proven throughout time and history that if you mix the life passage...
What do you mean by life passage?
By penetrating the vagina.
Okay.
That's what we call in sorcery, the vagina and the penis and the male testicles. The life passage, once that is unified in a traditional way, it only means for one person to go around and be promiscuous with that particular act has caused, I don't think, very many long-term connections.
It's because of the energy involved in, if you mix the energy?
Let's say, to put it more bluntly, in order to be really a real live human,
uh-huh.
you should be in love with everyone.
Right, but you don't have to penetrate everyone.
That's not love.
That's not love. That's
with your committed mate.
Yes, that's with your committed mate.
And okay,
that's for giving childbirth, for commitment, for the earth, and
that's
for
the tonal.
And the womb doesn't get confused.
But
that's the sensing organ for the female.
But you can have sexual energy with other people, just not the penetrations.
Not the vaginal penetration.
Right.
Oh,
sexual play and energy and. Nuichi invented a tube that is complete darkness to enhance seeing the energy and how it flows.
So sex dreaming with other partners to honor the sky and our mystery, the tube is a vehicle to transport ourselves
the
to other worlds.
The tube is. A tube.
The tube, yeah.
Uh-huh.
We practice sex dreaming in a tube. It's not a must, but it's a vehicle.
A darkened room is really a must. So it takes away the known world of looking. So partners who are participating in sex dreaming, darken the room as much as you can. Our tube is completely dark. You don't know where the ceiling is, and the walls are all curved. But they can do it at home, and that begins to develop their sense of seeing the energy between them.
Oh, so you would recommend for partners or for anyone to have, how would you, because you're saying two different things. You're saying there's the special partner, you do the penetration, and then there's other people that you can share energy with.
If you're traditionally doing sex dreaming, even with your committed partner,
yes,
it's not about penetration.
It's not.
What do you do instead?
Yeah.
What if people?
There can be penetration, not the vagina.
But that's
part.
That's not the focus.
Because we go into the ritual thing.
So what do you do instead then?
You know that what's great about everything that we're offering the world at the end of this map time is all the stuff that they've actually been doing already.
Which is?
Oral sex, anal play, all those things.
However, we start with positions so that we feel grounded together.
Uh-huh.
And then we take off in dreaming. It goes back to what we discussed this afternoon about feeling.
Uh-huh.
where you start to feel, you get into a position. The position is just a starting point.
A body position.
Yeah, together. But
it's developed over thousands of years to access certain worlds.
Right.
So in other words, for the common person, if they've ever been in considered like a doggy position, like all fours with the female in front, that actually, the sorcerer's discovered, accesses a particular world using that position without penetration.
When you say
you call
world,
it the fire position.
A world, you're saying a particular level of perception,
world,
and awareness.
A world that you can work in practically. Go there with other sex dreamers. Uh-huh. In the sand world, in this case, which is generated, you see it. Uh-huh. You see the horizon first manifesting. Then you go there with the intention of all the people in that position to meet in a hut that is in the sand world. Carlos Castaneda called it the place of the yellow dunes.
Uh-huh.
It has been known by sorcerers to be the closest of the onion skin to our own earth.
Wait, so you get there, but if the woman was in front and the man was behind, and you're not without penetration, what then happens there?
Just you leap together. It's like
just
it's
the
like
feeling,
riding.
Feeling the body.
You're generating energy. You can be actually moving, making all the motions, but with the intention of gaining so much blue energy that then you go leap, and wow,
and that's happened to you.
Oh yeah, and in the dark tube, you start to see the blue energy. And you also see it turn shade of purple.
Really?
And that's what Wilhelm Wright at the time defined as Orgon.
We conferred to
so
the author.
So we can see it in a black tube. You can
see
it.
To that name. We actually call it other names, but we're giving a tribute to Wilhelm Wright because the author wanted us to.
Right, because he did talk about Orgon energy.
He was right on.
Do you know that he was right here?
This is
his
last
stop. Research was right here.
Really?
In
I thought it was in Maine.
He came here because the energy's here, and like this too. The UFO activity was so intense in this area of Akamba Mountains that he came out here with his Orgon and Cloudbusters and things.
Oh.
And this was the last Western stop to do that research before he went back east and was arrested.
Also, knowing that this place is low gravity.
Yes. Is it low gravity?
Yes, we're lighter.
That could be why the UFOs come here, because it's they feed off a different energy.
Yeah, but we don't know enough about UFO. We stick with we don't feel comfortable going into the dense side of
well, they're
meetings,
just other worlds.
Remarkable meetings.
Yeah.
We like the idea of remarkable meetings happening interdimensionally through light.
And human beings. You're using the basic power of the human being, you're saying.
The totality.
Yes, the totality. Of you and your energy double, but also the manifestation of other dimensions here usually will happen subtly through light.
But you're saying we could use the sexual energy to start to manifest other dimensional spaces.
Definitely, because
the
possibilities
yes.
for intense amount of energy to be generated in a tube with eight people that have lost their self-importance.
Right.
And
so they're not doing it for their own pleasure. They're not having sex because they want to feel better about themselves.
There's a lot of sacrifice that one has to go through in order to be a battery sex dreamer in a tube.
In order to gain access to the other worlds.
Exactly.
You have to be committed to that intention. And it is two streets, because the sorcerers have unbending intent to take the next level and the next jump. For the common person, it's the intention that they become aware of this so that at the time of their death, they don't come to the gate empty-handed. They've practiced with their energy double.
Uh-huh. So part of the sex dreaming is building the energy body, the energy double. This is what the Taoists were after when they would, do non-ejaculatory copulation. What's your feeling about that?
I absolutely align with that. My feeling is about it. It's so intense to be with all these other beautiful sex dreamers, and I don't have an erection.
But you feel the energy. But it doesn't turn you on sexually.
I know. It's so remarkable, because when we started doing the research, I was thinking, well, that would represent Orgon accumulation or something. Mm-hmm. What's happened in the witches and the guidance of the sorceresses have explained everything about my old tonal of performance. Mm-hmm. Sex dreaming takes out performance, body image. That's why it's dark too. It washes clean the male and female intentions.
Older people, older women, older men. All generate energy together. There's no body image.
Well, how do you generate? There's no penetration, like you say, but how do you start to generate through movement and touch and all that?
Let's show them like connection. The air position. We can show you.
Sure, show me. I'll describe it.
Can you describe it?
I'll describe it. I'm going to describe what this is my
feeling and connection.
Feeling and connection. Yeah. Okay.
This is called the air producing. And it actually produces in the tube the most porous of it. It's the outer layer still connected to the Earth's.
Now, did you discover this stuff yourself?
When you see this, you're going to now tell the people how it combines with a lot of things you've seen before.
Okay. Okay. Ready? Okay. And wait, what's your names again? What do you want to call yourself here?
No, we want to call our name Teka
and
Nuit.
Teka and Nuit. I'm going to describe the position they're coming into. They're holding each other. They're looking in each other's eyes. They're staring at each other, nose to nose. They're breathing in and breathing out of each other's mouth here. There's a staring and a connection and there's sort of a sharing of breath. I see them involved in here and actually, I've written a book called Sex Dreaming, if you're interested in that. And they are breathing faster, a high, sort of a breath of fire type of a breath. Now they're blowing into each other's mouth, a kiss on the lips, a more long, energetic kiss. And it does seem like an exchange of energy.
Do we generate energy?
Something you've generated with some energy with each other.
Did you generate intensity?
Yeah, no, I felt the energy here. No, you generated something. But I've done that too, that kind of intense breathing. And yes. What do you do with it
they
now?
The Inuit women, the next Eskimo women who use that sort of throat singing,
mm-hmm.
They are batteries for all of the people in the igloo. They are the female who are the guides.
Inuit.
Yes.
But what do you do with it, energy? Now that you have it, how are you a battery for other people? Now that you've started to generate, I feel, what do you do with it?
Then we go to worlds. We can go to worlds 1,000 years out. We name them.
But how do you go to the worlds?
With our energy double.
Now that's double.
Now the crux of all of this, yes. Which most paths had me rather confused about until we began to discover our own awareness, was the fact that you have to be in two places at the exact same moment and the exact same instant for an extended period of time. You're very aware that you're holding the female hips, for example,
right.
In the fire position,
right.
With all the intensity that that involves. At the same time, you're aware of being in another world. Has to happen both ways.
So it's like a multi-dimensional consciousness you're building.
You're writing together.
You're right.
Yes.
And you're both journeying to the same world together.
Yes. Yes.
Because your energies are locked together.
We start to describe, we get to a world, which usually he's the spearhead.
As
he takes us to a world.
I begin to give verbal instructions in the tube, for example. You're seeing the horizon of the sand world. It's golden up above.
So and you're actually seeing this.
You have your eyes open.
But once we're there, in the world, mm-hmm. We start seeing what he's saying, but we're also seeing other things that he hasn't seen.
Mm.
And we're starting to describe to each other the world, and we're building together this second attention.
So you're accessing a sort of subtle feeling awareness that you're starting to awaken these new parts of the brain that start to see and feel the subtle energies and we're kind of mapping
out
this
here
terrain.
Out here and inside. Out, blue, purple, and inside.
And then do you take that back to this world? I mean, are you able to...
always Toltec. Through art.
Toltec
through
means artists.
Oh.
Shamanistic theater.
When we were approached by Anthony to give this knowledge out, we knew that it had to be also creative, artistic, not just a how-to manual.
Oh.
So his stories are throughout there. His beginning in the Summer of Love, his apprenticeship with Terence McKenna.
Who's Anthony? Who's the guy, Anthony?
That's a pseudonym also.
For?
Personal reasons, and also because there's a part connected with his life. He has chosen to use that pseudonym.
But what's his connection to you, this guy?
He found us.
He's your benefactor, would you say?
No. He's just the author who met us in New Mexico and began to tell.
We're giving him the knowledge.
He had temple sessions with us, and we began to narrate to him.
Oh, so he wrote the book for you guys based on your practices.
We had no idea of being here with you, Alan.
Okay.
It was like jumping off a precipice.
Okay.
We have worked so hard to prepare our awareness for coming out. We're like floating.
Oh, are you coming out now?
We are coming out now.
Oh, I'm honored.
Through
yes.
For me
yes.
here.
Yes. Because Anthony decided not to do the work of doing
you
that.
You see the two?
But what do you mean he decided not to do the work?
He didn't want the public to know about him. These are for very personal
That's
reasons.
Okay. Whatever. Yes. Maybe he's married or something. Yeah. I don't know. But so wait. So, okay. So this is the first time you're coming out with these energetic practices.
Sex streaming practices to the general public, which was my my benefactor told me that the missing ingredient was the thing called the conjunction.
And what is that?
I had no idea. I said, you mean sexual intercourse? He said, absolutely not.
Okay.
When the energies come together, male to male, female to female, male to female, there's a conjunction that happens. You have to translate this Cohen, catapult.
A conjunction. So you're saying sexual energy of any type creates a maybe a vortex, maybe a intersection of time and space.
First, they notice that those energy doubles, and people would call it. I maybe even had a great orgasm. Let's use a pedestrian thing. And I left my body for a while. You hear all those things.
Well, that's what orgasm means—the little death. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah. Exactly. And that knowledge for the Toltecs became paramount to training, not just letting it go every time, but how can we? Being a disciplined artist that they were, how do we now make a map to help people not just forget what happened, how to use it?
So one place, one amazing place that we go to in the Zen world is the Zen Hut. And inside the Zen Hut, there is a pool uh-huh. of blue orgone energy.
And you actually see this and feel this.
Yes. And we feel this and we go there and there we meet other beings.
You meet other beings.
That come to the pool of Orgon.
Wait, let me...
And we start to sex dream with them.
Wait, let me see if I understand. So you're in a darkened room. You start to generate the sexual energy together. But you don't... It's not necessarily pleasure you're indulging in. You're
Some
moving...
Some could be, too.
But then you're actually seeing... Using it to create vision of these...
To
travel to these other worlds. And then you start to see these other beings.
Yes. Explain, we call it traveling on a disc. Since our custom to, for sorcerers, is a round room, what occurs is that you lift off on a disc together.
Think about eight warriors
yes,
on a disc.
On a disc.
And the disc is actually the power of the intention of the eight warriors.
Like do you plant the intention before you start the
yeah,
practice?
Yeah, it's a magnetic field that's round between mm-hmm. us, and that's how we travel together.
So you're in a room with eight other people, or seven.
It varies.
And you're all male, female, working with partners, but with each other as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're leading them as a Nagual.
Right.
And then you start to, you don't know what worlds will
I
be generated.
I have to use my unbending intent to see and read the energy fields. And then began to use my sense of seeing with eyes open in the two when the world is beginning to manifest. And then I will say we're arriving at the sand world. Or in many cases, we've traveled out to regions that are way distant from the earth itself.
I think I want to try this.
Now, I would like to bring it also for the those who are not sorcerers.
Right.
This book is not just for sorcerers. We're talking here about the highest level that you can achieve. But all the way down to where in day-to-day life uh-huh. you can have associate sex dreamer partners that generate energy together so that you build back your luminosity. People are walking the earth now with no luminosity, and that's the biggest deal for our awareness and for our seeing mm-hmm. as magical beings.
Wait, so the sexual energy without intercourse will start to build the field, the luminous field around
exactly
the person.
Back, yes.
But they'll start to feel it
flyers
as sexual
out.
Energy though, right?
All flyers and, out.
Now, what we cover
but
in the book.
For that, the biggest deal is sacrifice of your self-importance.
What do you mean by self-importance? Like you're doing, I'm having sex for me and myself, you mean?
Knowing that you are with your life partner, you know that, you know, you have your commitment with the womb and the vagina only reserved to each other and to your kids and to your family, but also knowing that your partner can love another person here,
right
in front of you. They're with the limitations,
right?
But they can generate energy together, and you can watch it and lose your self-importance.
Oh, without getting jealous or caught up in the drama, that kind of stuff, you mean?
It's a sacrifice. The idea that you take on a sacrifice for the well-being of the big picture.
Because sometimes what you get from another person who's not your partner is a little extra energy
it's
that
exactly
you can bring
the
back.
The mystery that we lose through routine.
So it's an energetic amplification.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your committed partner, but then you actually share energy to bring it back and create a whole kind of vast
understanding. And you know that you're safe because you're holding the same map.
Yeah.
You know your partner is not going to break the one thing that
the
we
commitment.
Said.
Yeah.
No vaginal penetration with the other people. You're holding the same map. You're holding the key, and the key is that through sacrifice, we gain our magical being again.
Only when we become honest with our true seeing of the love that we generate to more than one person. Do we really do the unification on the light side that everyone is talking about?
Mm.
How do we really find out that this word love is a substance that you can see? The color dust, you can see what love looks like.
So do you recommend going into a darkened room with like a few other people and start to play with the energy and start to move into other worlds together?
Well, it's a process. You start by doing very simple things like going to the beach together, you know, let's say a foursome. I mean, it could be all kinds of formations, threesome, foursome, fiftsome. Threesome happens to be the most difficult. But you go to the beach together and you get naked and you hold each other's hands and then look at each other.
Uh-huh.
You start slowly.
That starts to build the energy.
Yeah, you start just by simple things that are not even touching.
Mm-hmm. No touching at first.
Yeah, you have to build trust with each other. You have to get to know each other, you know, and then obviously eventually clothed, you do the positions. Then maybe you become more advanced, you're unclothed, and you switch partners. Maybe you just stay with your partner for a while, you know, like that.
Doing this gift, we've seen people continuously want to do something like that, but not be able to have it not disrupt the known world.
What do you mean? Like getting into like...
intimacy with another person
is
so extremely powerful.
Yeah.
That only a samurai discipline, intention, will create what we're talking about, an understanding. It's a discipline. Mm-hmm. As well as an artist.
And the idea that self-importance is that's our biggest challenge in the Western
because
society.
Because of jealousy, you're saying? This person's mine? Well, is that what
in,
you
in
mean?
Sex dreaming,
you can mention the sex dreaming gardens. The female has various gardens that are...
But that sex dreaming uses the idea of losing self-importance is a real gift.
So let me see if I'm really getting this. So
what is it about the gardens?
Yeah.
The various gardens of the female, it's a great chapter in the book.
Yeah, the gardens.
The gardens are like the
gates
of power, which are covered too. But the gardens are particular to the female. And one of the gardens that she tends is the garden of jealousy.
Oh, okay.
Another one is the garden of old age. And her garden of old age has her face all of the things that she needs to face for her awareness.
So by doing that, you start to drop the ego and build the double. Would you say that? You can't build a double energetic body if you still have ego because that drains it.
Well, the other part of sex dreaming is dreaming. So we've always used the dreaming energy double in some way. Everyone has access to that. But in bringing the two bookends together, which normally are considered as far away from each other as possible, grounded earth-based sex and out-of-body energy double dreaming, by bringing those two intensities together, you reach the unknowable.
Okay. And by bringing commitment on the earth and honoring our mystery with other partners.
What do you mean? When you say the unknowable, what do you like, what does that mean?
The sex is the known.
Yes.
Okay. The dreaming is using the unknown.
Yes.
When you bring those two together, it's like water and fire. When they initially did that, they didn't ever think that was possible, and steam was created. Then you travel into the unknowable. You have lost your concepts, except for a few positions, and you are now in a whole new world.
So you lose your human form, but yeah, and your pure
and
energy.
You have it. Sex, human form, dreaming, energy double, at exactly the same moment, splits your body.
Uh-huh.
And at that moment, you become an aware individual.
So that's your practice. That's an awakening for you. And then you could travel to other worlds. And where does it all get you eventually, though?
Well, firstly, as I said...
He's a man who wants...
Well, firstly, as I said...
Return
on
investment.
Maybe it doesn't get you anywhere.
We want to return the magic and the mystery as us being luminous beings.
Right. Okay.
And beings of energy, okay? Because there are two traditions. There's the formal tradition and there's the energetic tradition.
A formal tradition of what?
Formal tradition deals with following forms.
Okay.
Okay. The energetic tradition deals obviously with energy, with saving energy and seeing through having more and more energy. The formal tradition is usually used by religions.
Mm-hmm.
They tell people how to do this and how to do that. It's like it's
how they should do sex, when they should do sex, where during sex you're going to go to hell if you do this.
The energetic tradition asks people to feel and to learn through feeling.
Yeah, you know, in India they call that the difference between the bhakti path and the shakti path. The bhakti is the following the suras, and the shakti is the energetic experimenting.
So sorcery belongs to the energetic.
Yeah, the shakti,
The sorcery is the energetic.
Right.
Like, for instance, what's his name? Maganya?
Maganya. Sergio Maganya?
Sergio Maganya.
Oh, yeah, I've interviewed him.
He belongs to the formal tradition. He gives people cycles of numbers to follow.
Yes, he does, yeah.
It's more in the formal. And the sorcerers are completely different.
Because he's not a sorcerer. You're saying he's more of a shaman who's from a traditional.
I don't know what he is. I just know that the tradition, whatever I read in the book that he wrote, lot of following. I mean, literally, I could dedicate myself days upon days to doing breathing through numbering.
So that's a formal practice. But you guys have thrown away the books. In a way,
and given us another book,
but you've gone totally into the energy, and so you're saying people lock themselves in a dark room. Let's not lock themselves, but could this happen for lots of people who are open and want to experiment with energetics?
Someone who read our book came to us and said, "I like to have sex with the lights on." She kind of missed the point.
Right.
The thing was that we were doing the not doing of sex.
Right.
And the dark room helps with that.
So then you're much more sensitive to energies.
And
yes,
presence
and
feeling.
And feeling.
Now the presence of an older man could be much more than a young looking, you know.
Because it's not about looks
young,
then.
Young good looking steed, you know. It's kind of like, you know, when you go into the tube, it's about presence.
Well, describe the tube a little bit, because you mentioned, what do you mean by the tube? It's a dark room or what?
Nuit was channeling when we were building a place in New Mexico that it should have a black tube inside.
What do you mean by tube?
That's what I said. I said, what do you mean by black tube? It goes up about 14 feet.
It's a round room.
It's a round room.
8 to 10 feet diameter on the inside.
Completely black.
It has
dark.
Completely, because it has a velvet curtain that then when that's drawn, you know, like in a Temescal, the Tolteca tradition is like a sweat lodge. When the curtain is closed, you are now in a sacred space of basic darkness if it wasn't for the glowing rocks.
Oh, so you built a totally dark space.
Mm-hmm.
And how long do you actually spend in the room? I mean, with these other people. I mean,
well, that's where, again, you're training yourself in awareness. So when you see the energy, and it's my responsibility to stay the most grounded, because I can tell the people the energy has shifted. And I always try to do it in a creative thing, because it's a creative process, by, as I've been doing in this program, using sound or something. So there's a gentle knowing that the disc is now about ready to land back where we started.
Back in the old world, though, you came from. Yeah. So, okay, but let's just describe it a little bit. You go into the room with maybe three or four or five.
Let's go with four people.
Okay, let's go with four people.
Okay, all right.
It's four of us. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So we're going in the tube together.
Yes.
And I'll kind of
guide us in as if we were in, because, you know, people listening on the radio or the internet, they are sort of in the dark because all they're hearing is sound.
Also, I mean, you know, remote sex streaming is possible. So we'll just go visit everybody now.
Okay.
We'll
take so we're going to do some sex streaming for those still listening there.
So we're going to...
Yes.
I think with this audience, I think they're pretty advanced. We can actually remove all of our clothes before we go in the tube.
You remove all your clothes. You're completely naked and you're going...
And the velvet curtain is pulled back.
Okay.
And four people go in. And all of our
two men, two women.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
And we begin to touch each other so that we understand who's who by their physical body. So maybe we run our palms around their legs or head. We circle them. We stay intended as spirits.
Okay. Right?
So eventually the Nawal might say, okay, I see now that it's time and our energy has been built to the extent that now we can all lay side by side, touching.
Wait, do you build the energy by generating sexual activity? Is that part of it?
In all Toltec rituals, you make a very loud exclamation to spirit. You say a sense. So we would say together, we all want to go to the water world.
Okay. And you set intent.
Set intent.
Okay.
And then the Nawal will position them if people are new at sex dreaming so that they are just touching side by side. They are forming a human raft. They're all staring up into complete darkness. It doesn't really matter if your eyes are closed or open. You see eventually the same thing.
So you're laying side by side, heads, everyone in the same...
Side by side.
Same direction.
A large raft with all the visitors out there. And we're extending out maybe like 12, 14 feet. Then one person, usually in the water world, will begin to navigate, and that's a female. And the female would say something like...
She'd say something like that? That's good.
Yes.
That's good. Okay, she'd say something like that. No, but she'd say what? What would you say in
what
the water world?
Breathe into me.
Breathe into me. Okay, I'm with you.
And I would begin to say, feel the water that we're floating on together. Uh-huh. Underneath us is a vast pool of water that is expanding from the center of our energy.
Mm-hmm.
It expands all out into every direction,
mm-hmm,
with no horizon.
Okay.
And we float there. We understand each other as an integral part to each other's safety. If the raft breaks apart because somebody's not intended, then I will bring everyone back.
So you create a kind of collective mind, a group field.
Yes. And that you want, because we're serious about infinity. Without, for us as sorcerers, a group of sorcerers to go to infinity with, our chances of survival are a lot reduced.
So have you gone to infinity, or are you building towards infinity? I mean,
infinity is a broad name for all the worlds that we visit.
I see.
The furthest is the air world that we demonstrated, where the molecules of our energy doubles are very dispersed. There's hardly any frame, as opposed to the sand world, where there's a more distinct frame.
How many worlds are there?
On the layer of the onion skin, we use the elements that we're familiar with here on the earth.
Uh-huh.
So we've written about in the sex dream book the four most immediate worlds. We've hinted at some of the other worlds on the outer perimeter, but you really have to have an energy core of sex dreamers to sustain the impact of those worlds. Going solo is very difficult.
So by doing it in a group, and you all start to see the same thing, huh?
Yes.
That's amazing. You're generating a
that
feel.
That really is amazing.
Have you done this a lot?
Not only that, I have to tell you that our apprentices who we trained are now training other sex dreamers.
Yeah.
And they're amazed how they became teachers.
Oh.
They didn't think they could do it without us at first, but our whole intention was, as in the Toltec map, that couples are sprinkled throughout the globe teaching other people.
Wow. That is great. And
that's why I kind of told you when we mentioned Carlos and Carol Teagues traveling together to another world, that we thought that they probably started with sex dreaming.
Right.
And he didn't write about it in the book because maybe he didn't want to, or it was three-pronged.
They avoided sexuality in the book, basically.
Well, yeah, they did. There was some mention of it. They're talking about the Carlos Castaneda books. But but you're saying the real Toltec practices had a lot more sexuality in them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they passed on through couples who were committed to keep it in the nomenclature, and we had to retrieve it.
I have gone to the past, and I've seen sexual practices from the past.
Ah, from the Toltec tradition.
Yes. I mean, I've seen things.
Like what kind of practices?
One practice that I've seen were these women, white, totally white-skinned women on a river, and they're in the doggy position.
Yes.
And there's the guys behind them, and there's ravens on their back. Black ravens on their back.
Okay.
And they're actually sex dreaming with the ravens as well.
Oh, because the ravens were wisdom.
People were much more on the earth at that time. Mm. And you know, that a woman would go, and I think the guys were kind of like way behind, but it was more about the women and the ravens on their backs.
So let me see if
And another one was, for instance, like a round hole. Come to think of it, was a huge round tomb.
Okay.
With all the females in the centers and the males walking in a circle around, circling them around. And they're in the doggy position and they all make stops.
Now, how we
with the women.
How would she discover that information was
That's
not
by
in the
going
tomb.
Back.
That was going to a power spot out on the land
where
the shamans of that time, thousands of years ago, had worked. One of the things is that we try to get tools on our belts that are specialties, so that for us, you can abdicate. You can say, "Oh, that person's specialty is place or timing." The power spot that she got that information was manicured by sex dreamers from the past, and that was out in the wild land.
Yeah. And we recommend to people to find their power spot. Where you find information.
But you're also saying that the sexual energy that everyone has been so underutilized. It's been not used for its proper purposes of activating a higher consciousness or journeying to other worlds.
Because of the difficulty of being on Earth and being also part sky and part... That's the hardest thing to balance.
Is what?
The sexual. Is being on Earth with a physical body and being also sky as spirit beings.
Okay.
That's what we are. We are spirit. Part animal, part spirit beings. And that balance is crucial. Crucial
if we're to
create
a
not
new,
to waste the dawn, you know?
A new reality, we have to get out of the flyer mind control that has put greed and lust in it. They've changed the beauty and the mystery of sexuality into a darkness that has infected the planet in a myriad of different ways we can list. And until we get that darkness out, we cannot have our global evolution.
Our global evolution?
Yes, our global.
We have a multimedia show. We're a group called All Orange Multimedia.
All Orange.
One of our shows is global, and it's about, glowing balls from the earth to the moon.
Growing what?
Glowing balls.
Glowing balls.
Yeah, from the earth to the moon and to other beings manifesting here on this dimension through being glow balls.
Oh, no. I just saw these glow balls from China. They're called these Zumei Wing Stones. They're only held by the royalty in China, and they're starting to manufacture them again.
So you can see the glow balls or beings could manifest in the tomb.
The glowing beings. That's something
they
else.
They could manifest in the tomb.
And you've seen that.
We actually did, as Toltecs, we did sculptures of them inside the tube, so that if more energy is needed, they are available to travel on the disc if we don't have enough warriors. And they're inorganic beings. And those totems represent them.
So let me ask you, if you're just like a couple there, could you still do sex dreaming?
I was going to go to that. This is like the sorcery part.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, but the thing is that we want to preserve love. The divorce rate is astronomical. The rate of cheating or things that are not about true best use of sexuality has brought us to this precipice that we're sharing this at this time because we don't have a lot of time left, both as sorcerers and as a human race, to understand what our true totality is. We're all on the precipice right now.
Of what? What's happening? What's going down?
Of losing our awareness. Of not using all of the tools that we've worked, that lineages have worked for thousands of years. Bring it out now. Just like the balls you said, bring out sex dreaming now. Unite. We have to work together using all of these things. Secrecy is a luxury we can't afford right now.
And sex dreaming could be great for like a beginning couple.
So if
don't have to decide to be life partners right away. They do sex dreaming.
But how would they do it? They create a dark room.
No penetration, you know.
No. So how would they do it then?
The book discovers it lists the complete map, the interior system, which is similar to the chakra system. Uh-huh. We have different names for that.
Read the book.
Yeah, I will read the book. But just for people listening a little bit, it's possible for a couple even meeting –
it's mandatory. For example, my daughter, for example, I won't get into all my personal history.
Okay.
But the fact is, for the fathers out there who have daughters who are beginning their sexual exploration, they will see their daughters get confused because if the daughter gets penetrated vaginally too early on in the relationship, that means that she's confused, her intuitive sensing.
So what would a father do for the
daughter? He said, I give you the sex dreaming book.
And what would that do? What would that
would show her that vaginal penetration is not a viable use of her power.
So you can use sexual energy without the penetration.
People do it all the time. Flirting, dancing.
That's massage, that's generating.
All those things are Tolteca techniques originally started on this landscape to help you do things. Dancing, which are a boost for everyone. When a relationship starts, that power and that magic is there all the way until vaginal penetration. Unless
and then
it's over.
Power,
then it's over.
That should be reserved for when you decide to be life partners.
So you're saying let's keep building the energy and not do the because
you'll get confused and that person will be gone,
but
divorced,
or
lost.
So we build the energy, and then what do we do with the energy? We dream with it, you're saying?
Yeah, we dream with it. But also, as for couples, you realize also if the person is alchemically connected to you, that maybe you do want to be life partners.
Well, you don't know, of
course. And then,
think about the beauty of actually dreaming. Dreaming with every person that you meet before you bring it down and decide what the tonal relationship is. Imagine true and honest communication at last.
Right.
Because the females in a young age, as you're saying, like a daughter and father relationship, that they are entering into a battlefield where there's no guidelines, and it's our responsibility to start returning the feminine power, and it's our responsibility now in giving this to let the males love everything. They love their cars. They love their jobs. There's a wide spectrum of love. They don't have to narrow it in the confused way they've been doing it.
Well, it sort of makes sense because, you know, the penetration, in a sense, is the loss of the energy because then it becomes focused and centralized. And
objectified.
Yeah, go ahead.
Objectified into the survival mechanism, which is the family, which is a good thing.
Right.
I love that. Alan's getting very relaxed now in the mood.
No, but what were you going to say? You wanted to share something? We can wrap up in a little, but what were you going to say? You wanted to share another aspect of this? Did you have something you wanted to?
Yes, but it's... there's various levels of sex dreaming with this first book.
Oh.
We are giving you something that is accessible, easy to understand.
Right. This is the beginning level.
This is the beginning level.
And in the book also, since we are from the lineage of Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan, is a brief explanation of everything sorcery. So people... It's almost like you cannot do sex dreaming without those firstly understanding some of the concepts. And so we have brought some of the concepts forth.
Like what?
The emanations of the
ego, assemblage point.
Oh, okay.
All the what we call science, mystic science.
Okay.
Energy equals seeing, power spot, all that.
Well, how do you define sorcerer as opposed to shaman or...
I knew you were going to ask that. Because
I mean, I have a sense.
I know what you're going to say.
What?
They're connected with the source. I'll buy that. You know,
I would say that sorcerers are alchemists who put perception as their first and foremost avenue to research.
I would say sorcerers are someone who's really more concerned with the energetic body and using that to like you say, further awareness and create greater perception. Those are the real sorcerers who are interested in perception.
They're shifters.
And awareness.
Yes. And in the Toltec tradition, they come with art. When we're looking
at... Toltecs are artists. Yes.
Because it's about... Art is about perception.
Manifesting that way. For the common person, doesn't have to be a member of the Toltec lineage. The common person has to, when they read the book, see... If any of those little things throughout their childhood, like wanting to fly, wanting to remember their dreaming, if those were moments that they relished and loved, then this is to enhance and help them understand how they can use that with a loving partner.
No, I think it's very exciting what you're starting to develop, this otherworldly awareness, and then you do it with love, and you work the energy.
And honesty.
And you use it to open up consciousness.
Yes.
This is what it's about.
We want to meet other people out there. One day we'll be walking in the sand world.
Meet you in the sand world.
Yes. We can do remote dreaming that way.
Sure.
And there comes Alan.
Okay. How do you know it's me if you're
on the phone? And we're saying that in order to do that.
We pick a thing that's particular on the person if it's remote. For example, I would look at you and I would think of you wearing that hat as we did when we walked in the desert.
Yeah, we love
so
that.
We can locate that. And you would set up with remote sex dreaming the exact time and place to meet what world and things.
Oh, I think I've done that. Yeah.
Yes.
But everybody has to remember, though, that there is a sacrifice to put forth before you are able to enter.
And what's that?
And as I said, you must sacrifice your self-importance. And that is not a simple thing as it seems like, but it is a heavy thing that we carry with us. And we can definitely feel our energy double when we lose it.
Right. But ultimately, I want to know what, you know, sex dreaming, great energy, what's the ultimate destination for the practice? Where do you want to go?
What's defined for the common person or the sorcerer?
Well, let's start with the common person. What will this do for the common person?
It will keep their love alive. They will never go through divorce. Or separation.
It will build back their luminosity.
It will make them. They will make them prepared for their ultimate leaving, which is an understanding that they have some tools when they reach the gate of death.
And for the sorcerer, what is it for the sorcerer? The warrior.
For a Nawal sorcerer as myself, it's to find other dreamers who I want to spend infinity with.
You really want to spend infinity with some other people?
I know. As the author says, as Anthony says in the book, he goes, I can't even find one person I want to spend infinity with. I have no choice.
It is our responsibility to the earth. We were born here as physical beings, and we learned so much from this beautiful, beautiful earth. And for us as sorcerers who are able to leap with our energy double, not to take... that experience with us into infinity as our tribute to the next world or to the next civilization, we must do that.
I mean, otherwise, we must tell people the truth of our practical experience now. Our practical experience is that this works. We're giving it as an offering.
It works because you've done it and you've had the experience.
And that means that this sharing fulfills lineage of sex dreamers that started thousands of years ago. And through modern technology and this program, we have come into a position where we can disseminate this worldwide.
Well, that's what we're doing here. We're going to do a video about this as well. It's very exciting because I always suspected there was more to sex and, than what they told us. And I think, you know, you have something. And so you're saying anyone who gets this book can start the practice?
Yes,
this is written by an everyman. He talks about his personal trials and tribulations and is constantly questioning us in the temple and in the interviews and walking of how can this be applicable to the common person. So he has helped focus us. There's a map. There's really the information for...
But how can people get this book? Because this is really you laying it out. What would be the best way to order this book?
Amazon.
Amazon?
Search books.
Search books, sex dreaming, esoteric sexuality revealed.
All they have to remember is sex dreaming. It's the first book.
And
that
you can get
that.
It on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try it. I mean, why not?
I think the beauty of it is the personal experience and the success. And we have been on a path crossing many times. And we even look familiar to each other. So meeting you and validating that remote sex dreaming is a valid gift to people so that they become total, the totality of themselves.
So the energetics of the sexual energy starts to build, like you said, the auric field, the luminosity. So we start
but
to...
But also your energy double, which is different.
And also expands awareness as well. That's the key here, expanded awareness.
If well, people, the common person does not want awareness, this book is not for you.
Right, but we're not talking to common people.
No, we're not. No.
So
well, we are. I mean, we're talking to everyone that can.
No,
but
his, not everyone's audience, interested in that.
His audience.
In new reality.
We came together with Alan because we said Alan is aligned with that bigger evolution with his new realities.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a precipice today upon your arrival. I didn't know what to think because we're revealing ourselves, but Spirit kept on saying he's the proper messenger. You might spar on the floating disc together, but you guys are going to extract the darkness and join linking the light together. You both want this.
Okay. Well, I'm open. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
I'm here with Tekka and Nuit. And their new book about sex dreaming, you get it on Amazon. I think it's an amazing practice because it is sort of the missing link between consciousness and energy and physicality and spirit.
Well, I saw a perfect example of being in two places at once. You have the ability to dream in this conversation, and then you also know that your position, and we use Tolteca terminology, stalking, is to also bring the people back to earth and advertise the book. So you can shift rather rapidly because of your work.
Thank you. I guess we're living in two worlds. And then, you know, I also like to thank my first guest, Mike Barra, who's laid out a whole other world, which
that's another shift. He's amazing, isn't he?
Well, we're all shift between worlds. We're shifting between worlds. But thank you. And we'll continue the conversation for sure.
Yes.
And, yeah, when do I get to experiment? We'll get to that. Okay.
Are you ready to go to New Mexico?
Sure. I used to live in New Mexico.
Well, we have our two.
All right. But I'll say goodnight here. Thanks for listening. This is Alan Steinfeld and the Shaman Van Strasser is here in Southern California. And I recommend the book, and thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, go to newrealities.com. Look for Contact in the Desert there, or at the Contact in the Desert at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. Thanks, and we'll do more shows here. Okay, good night.